After the collapse of the USSR, the Russian state underwent a severe identity crisis. One way to resolve it was to unite the nation by putting forward Orthodox Christianity as a carrier of national identity. Since the 1990s, the political and public authority of the Russian Orthodox Church has been gaining more and more support from the government and certain social groups. And there are two key events of invasion of Russian Orthodox Church into political into public sphere and into politics in 2000, the basis of social concept of the Russian Orthodox Church was introduced as an attempt to provide a kind of national identity, and 11 years later, the concept of traditional values was proposed by Orthodox intellectuals and by other social groups, and Patriarch Kirill types traditional values as universal values of faith, love, duty, responsibility, and solidarity. And this concept of traditional values becomes a basis of Russian conservative ideology that influences on political discourse. And in 2005, it was a certain tone in Russian politics from pro-Western to anti-Western orientation, and before and after the presidential elections in Russia in 2011 and 2012, conservative ideology with a lot of references to orthodoxy was actively used by politicians, and the aim of the using of ideology was to mobilize the national elites and to consolidate the society. And there is huge visibility of Russian Orthodox Church in the public space provoke hated public debates about the role of Orthodoxy in the development of Russian society, and it is a certain split of public opinion in Russia into liberals and conservatives, and attitude to the rock becomes an indicator of political identity of different social groups. And the first one group is liberal. The liberals are strongly opposed to the presence of the Russian Orthodox Church in the public space, and they criticize orthodoxy and conservatism as deterrent factors preventing Russia from following the European path of development. And conservatives, they see orthodoxy as a positive, mainly positive factor, and underlying positive effect of the Russian Orthodox Church in the presence of national self-identification. And this split into two groups in public opinion influence on the way how Orthodox and Russian Orthodox Church activity is covered in different media. And we can see that there are a certain difference between coverage of Orthodoxy events on centralized national channels and internet mass media, because of the kind of ownership. Centralized national channels are controlled by the authorities and the controlling block of shares of all national channels belong to the state, and they are used as a means to propagate state ideology. That is why it could be two options. Some channels provide neutral, and other channels provide ideological coverage and maintain the status of orthodoxy as cultural and ideological basis of society. And internet mass media, they are mainly private. The controlling blocks of shares belong to business community, and they promote an oppositional liberal position, and they covering orthodox events. They concentrate on the critique of Russian Orthodox Church. It is mainly political sphere. They critique its intervention into public sphere, and it is also some scandals are covered by internet mass media. It is also important to mention the situation around the freedom of press in Russia. And after 1993, the law of press freedom was accepted, but it was not so easy. And today we have there are some ways to put pressure on the mass media in Russia. They are, for example, the restrictions on the access to information for journalists, the division of journalists into ours and others. And for example, ours have a good access to information. They have a cooperation with different government institutions, and others have restricted access to information. And the third mean of pressure is the control exercised by such institution as Minister of Culture and Mass Communication. And as I mentioned, centralized national channels are controlled through their top executives who are appointed directly from those loyal to the government. And most of the mass media participate in political competition by supporting different parties. And in this situation, independent mass media support liberal political parties, support oppositional parties, centralized national channels support state ideology. That is why we can see a lack of neutral news coverage of orthodoxy, and not only orthodoxy, it is also a lack of neutral news, of factual news in Russia. The aim of this presentation is to compare the difference between of coverage of Orthodoxy and Russian Orthodox Church activity on TV and on internet. I took for analysis the most popular two TV channels in Russia. They are Russia One and the First Channels. And I also took for analysis the most ranking new web media, such as RBK.ru and Lenta.ru. The analyzed period was since November till January. It's just 3 months, but it is not my big research project. I use critical discourse analysis as a main theoretical approach. About covering Orthodox events on TV, it is important to mention that TV channels are mostly concentrated on coverage of Orthodox holidays. And in the research period, the key Orthodox events were celebration of the National Unity Day, which coincided with the religious holiday of the Kazan icon of the Mother of God, the DNA testing of the remains of the last Russian Emperor Nikolai II, the conflict between the Moscow Patriarchate of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church and the Ukrainian Patriarchate, which strives to be an autonomous structure, Orthodox Christmas and Epiphany. And the channel Russia 1 mentioned Orthodox events more frequently. There are 22 news reports out of in the in the 22 of 70 new casts, Orthodoxy and Russian Orthodox Church was mentioned, and on the first channel, in 16 of 70 new casts, Orthodox events were touched. And I would like to describe how the two main events, such as National Unity Day and Christianity, are covered in the both channel, in the both channels, and to compare this coverage. On the Russia one, there were two reports about the celebration of the National Unity Day of a total duration of 8.8 minutes. Here we can see some screenshots of these reports. And their reports touched the civic demonstration in Moscow, and especially how different politicians participate in civic demonstrations. And then they switched to Orthodox holiday services, and also the procession of the cross celebrating in their celebrating the Kazan icon of the Mother of God. And at the end, it is highlighted that the Putin and Patriarch Kirill together laid flowers to the monument to Minin and Pozharsky. And on the this is a screenshot from the first channel report. At this channel there were three reports about this event, and the total duration was less. It is 6.88 minutes, and there. Civic celebration of the Unity Day were strictly separated from the religious celebration, and in the first case they were mixed and put into one report. And it was also highlighted that Patriarch Kirill is an unequivalent person to President Vladimir Putin, and their actions were separated. For example, it was told that Putin laid flowers at the monument to Minin and Pozharsky, along with Patriarch Kirill and representatives of other confessions. And the second one is a Christmas celebration. On Russia 1, Christmas celebrations were covered by five separate reports with a total duration of 18.15 minutes. It were Christmas celebration or in Russia, their Christmas festivities, their celebration of Christmas in other Orthodox countries with a special focus on Syria, celebrations in Ukraine and their celebration in the Crimea and in Kronstadt, and their countries and places were chosen according to their ideological agenda, according to present Russian politics, they were chosen in order to highlight the national power, the political power of the country. It is Crimea, it is Syria. And here Orthodox is shown as an important instrument to maintain national ideology, national identity. And it were the extract from the Christmas speech of Patriarch Kirill lasts 1.44 minutes and touch topics how about aggression, isolation, and how we can overcome these problems. And on the first channel, there were only three reports with a less duration of 5.92 minutes. They described the Christmas celebrations in Russia, celebrations in Syria, and the liturgy at St. Isaac Cathedral in St. Petersburg, and the fragment from Patriarch Kirill Christmas speech lasted only 0.45 minutes. And it was also some interviews with Orthodox believers who spoke about their understanding of religious celebration, and the main accent was placed on the role of Orthodoxy in encouraging mutual support and help. And for example, one believer told, my grandmother died when she was 100 years old, and I don't know firsthand what faith is. It means believing in other people, believing in yourself, and believing in the country where you live. We have a great country, wonderful people, and we can do our best for the sake of each other. I wish us to try a little bit harder the next year. So here we can see a mixture between personal judgment, what is the role of Christianity in her private life, and then he switched on the public issues, and she highlighted the role of Orthodox in the public sphere. So this is the channel use this speech to maintain the ideological agenda. And as we compare the coverage of Orthodoxy events into two channels, we can see that on the Russia, the first, the usage of Orthodoxy to maintain state ideology can be seen much more frequently, and their post-secular perception of Orthodoxy as a significant social and political power dominated, and when we compare the time that different channels devoted to Orthodox events, we can see that Russia at one pays much more attention on coverage Orthodoxy events, and it is also more emotional coverage. And for example, in some news, Orthodox icons were shown in the background to demonstrate the reliability of the speaker. News broadcasts on this channel, news broadcasts are poorly organized. And I think it is a very good idea when you want to influence strongly to your audience. And they don't provide a lot of facts like figures, historical information, etc. And they emphasized most emotional components and their evaluation of the role of orthodoxy into promoting national identity. In compare with the Russia one, their first channel provides more neutral coverage of orthodoxy, and information or functions prevails over ideological. But of course, the channel has a strong ideological bias. But news, nevertheless, news reports provide a secular point of view when covering Orthodox events. And position of the church and the government are presented as independent of each other, and Orthodoxy is not proclaimed as a career of national identity. And now we are turning to the coverage of Russian Orthodox Church on different websites. And it is important to mention that internet media have more resources to make their religious agenda more diverse and democratic. They don't choose only such events as Orthodox holidays, but also concentrate on covering the Orthodox Church social and political activities. And we can see that there are four main topics of coverage the Orthodox Church activity. They are the internal life of the Russian Orthodox Church, and the other three are connected with external Russian external church activity, such as Orthodoxy and politics, Orthodoxy and society, Orthodoxy and economy. On RBK, Orthodoxy were mentioned more frequently. We can find mentions on Orthodoxy on 36 days from 92 days, and on Lentaru only in 30 days, Orthodoxy and Russian Orthodox Church were mentioned. And their information policy of internet mass media is to a greater extent determined by the audience, and the audience is mainly upper and middle class, which have liberal political views, so web resources try to attract this audience, and in that way they are more interested in liberal coverage of different events than in neutral one. When we look at RBK.ru, we can find out that there is a strong emphasis on political and social issues. Journalists provide a lot of facts, avoid sounding mental and give additional historical and retrospective information if it is necessary. So journalists try to provide a very neutral and informative news about orthodoxy, but at the same time we can see that the religious agenda is formed by choosing different kind of orthodoxy events, and it the way it is chosen, it is a way to express a liberal point of view. And the most frequent mentioned events in the monitored period was were the following: the resignation of the head of the Department for Church and Society Relations, Vsevolod Chaplin, and his joint to opposition. And it is important to mention that after Chaplin's resignation, there was a certain shift in RBK evaluation of his activity from ironical and skeptical and to become more sympathetic. This can be illustrated by the report of November 11. And here was spoken that the ROC wants to have the decisive role of the church in decision making in Russia. And there was a chaplain statement: we together, clergy and the laity, have a full power to ensure that our voice, the voice of majority, should be decisive for the adoption of any decisions related to the present and future. So the report emphasizes the ROC ambition to have more political weight in the society, but after Chaplin's resignation, the same statement was interpreted differently. It was then used to confirm the importance of democratic reforms in the society and in the church particularly. So church should be more open to the laity, to the laity voices. And since after the chaplain resignation, editors use chaplain's figure to implicitly highlight their liberal preferences, and they presented chaplain as a religious oppositional figure. The other important events were the Russian Orthodox Church activity Russian Orthodox Church activity, for example, it is a social activity such as the restitution of the church property, the debates about social inequality in Russian society, and different provocative statements and scandalous behavior of the clergy. For example, a priest involved into a road accident. And much less attention is paid to the internal life of the church. It's like construction and opening of new temples, and also structural changes within the ROC. And when we turn to news portal Lenta.ru, we can see quite different news agenda. On Lenta.ru, Lenta.ru combines the features of high-quality press and tabloid, and there is certain changes and in its informational politics after 2014, because the journalist and editor-in-chief were replaced by a loyal one to Putin's government. So it's it was a rapid change from oppositional media to quite neutral media with a combination of pro-state and oppositional features. And as RBK, Lenta.ru provides a diverse and comprehensive coverage of orthodox events. At the same time, its headlines are provocative and ambiguous. It is necessary to draw attention of bloggers who use a lot Lenta.ru, and there are a lot of reports in Russian mass social media from this site. And the Central Orthodox Central Orthodox issues were the relations between the church and the public sphere, and they were, as on RBK, debates about social inequality and about public ministry. For example, it is the head, Rezan Metropolitan, washed the floor in a city hospital. And cultural events with orthodoxy, such as Christmas, such as Epiphany, were also covered. And there was a certain irony about orthodox attempt to influence on public to influence on public sphere to be a moral authority for the secular society, and it is demonstrated by the heads. For example, Omsk Metropolitan urged people to abandon conception attempts during fasting because it might allegedly caused schizophrenia. And unlike the ironic treatment of the church claimed to be a moral authority, its political ambitions are discussed more neutral. The political significance of orthodoxy is demonstrated through highlighting the role of Christianity in Russia and in European development. There are several heads, such as Ligoida, spoke about the redemptive role of Christianity in Europe, and Matveyenko called the union of the government with the ROC a variant of victory or in the informational war. And conservative statements made by politicians and public figures are cited without being followed by any evaluative judgments. Yeah, and if we compare coverage of orthodoxy on Lenta.ru and RBK, we can say that Lenta.ru tends to be more cautious in its criticism of the Russian Orthodox Church intervention in the public sphere than RBK, because the political changes in Russian society and the liberal agenda of both media manifests itself through their choice of topics. The treatment of these events implicitly highlights the contradiction between the secular and religious trends in the society, and liberal idealization of the religious agenda leads to identification of orthodoxy with the ROC as an institution. In conclusion, it is important to point out that religious agenda of news websites are more liberal and diverse. News reports cover state-church relations and orthodox social events. the Russian Orthodox Church and Orthodoxy are presented in the critical light due to the state church cooperation, and websites are mainly websites concentrate not on explaining what is Orthodoxy, how Orthodox people live, but they choose only mostly external church activity. And TV channel, they have a more conservative religious agenda, but there is one channel, Russia, the first channel, who try to provide a neutral and informative understanding of Orthodoxy, and to explain to the audience something about Orthodox holidays and what and how Orthodox believers live, what values they have, and how they understand the importance of Orthodoxy in their life. So it's important to mention that we have two types of ideological coverage on Russian mass media. It is liberal and it is conservative, but there is still a lack of neutral coverage. Thank you for your attention.
Yes, I have. Thank you very much for your presentation. I have two questions. First one, is there in Russia any news service with a focus on religion? You know, like religion news service in the US, some press agency with a focus on religion news? And if this is the case, how does it flow in the different media? And my second question, there was in your presentation a kind of dichotomy. On the one hand, conservatives, on the other hand, liberals, with their own channels. And I was wondering, there are also conservative voices, Orthodox conservative voices, critical of the Russian Orthodox Church leadership. Where are those voices expressed? Do they have their own channels, for instance, independent websites, or are there... Or do they flow also either in liberal or conservative channels that you described?
Thank you for your questions. There are several news websites that such as Pravmir.ru, such as Orthodoxy.ru, but they are aimed to cover Orthodoxy mostly for Orthodox audience, and it is hardly to imagine that secular people are interested, and they are interested, and they monitor such websites. And news website Pravmir.ru, used by several Orthodox priests who have an oppositional position to express their political, their religious views, and to make some critique to current situation within Russian Orthodox Church. But I think it is a few voices, and Pravmir.ru, this news resource, does not concentrate only on these oppositional voices. And as I mentioned, Chaplin, it was after his resignation, he suddenly became a strongly oppositional figure, and he expressed a lot of critique to current Orthodox politics, but he was cited by different news portals because of his political expressions. And here it is mainly about this intertwining between politics and religion in Russia, which is very strong now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I'm also working on the Orthodox Church in Romania, so I have a few comparative perspectives. But first of all, just a further clarification regarding the introduction of your presentation, when you mentioned the document from 2000 regarding the basis of social concept of the Orthodox Church, and you said this kind of national ideology, and then the question is of the church or of the state? Because we should note that this document is more like a similar way of constructing a social doctrine of the Orthodox Church, similar to the Catholic doctrine of the church. And therefore, if you can reply to this question, and then to what extent the state is using this document. That is my first point. My second point is that it will be very interesting to highlight the continuity between Soviet and post-Soviet period regarding the church-state relation in the media, because otherwise it's very difficult to understand this religious revival in the Russian society and also in the Russian media. And then if finally, this church and state relation instrumentalizes a win-win situation from church and from the state. And then my last point would be that, again, it would be very interesting if you can touch also the notion of transnational coverage of Orthodoxy. And for instance, the Ukrainian case. There you can find, you mentioned the video where the Patriarch Kirill was mentioning in the Christmas Day the situation in Russia. I also remembering regarding also the Patriarch of Kiev addressing the same topic. So again, this will be very helpful for us to understand. And lastly, it will be very important, I guess, to remember that Russia is a secular state. Legally speaking, the 1997 law of religion is mentioning that Russia is a secular state, but of course, laïcité à la Russe, it's quite different from laïcité à la Française. Thank you.
Thank you for your questions and for your remarks. Firstly, about the basis of social concept of Russian Orthodox Church, there are several issues about orthodoxy and politics, orthodoxy and economy, orthodoxy and globalization, orthodoxy and human rights, how orthodox people should evaluate human rights concept, how Orthodox believers should evaluate globalization, what is advantages and disadvantages of globalization. There was a very important issue about family values, and it was used to promote conservative family values among Orthodox believers. And then, after the certain political shift in Russia, we can see that how these ideas, for example, these ideas were borrowed by politicians. For example, in the concept of this, in this in this document, there were mentioned the big mistrust to international organization, such as United Nations organization. Now it is a very popular idea in Russia political discourse. And so we can see that this document more or less shaped the current political debates. And here there are several important ideas about Russia, about Orthodox identity were elaborated, and then they become a kind of national identity. So we switched from Orthodox identity to national identity. And regarding law of that Russia is a secular state, we can see that definitely we are the secular state, but And Russian Orthodox Church highlights that it does not interfere into politics, it doesn't participate into politics, but it wants Orthodox voices to be heard into public sphere. And this intention is a very strong, and it means, in fact, it means that Russian Orthodox Church participates in politics, in spite of these calls, these statements that it doesn't participate. Thank you.
Yes, two types of questions, remark. You focused on a period where there was Christmas and Epiphany. So I wonder if you had been interested in another period of the year, if the proportion of information concerning the church would have been very different. But still, journalists do have to fill in the news. And I'm not sure, is there a website? Does the Cyril, does he have a website? Or is there a radio like Radio Vatican? Or do they try not to have a personal channel so they can be more on public channels? If they have a private radio, private website, or a private TV, if they had one, maybe they would be less visible on other common channels. So I wonder, you see, maybe it's easier to be well seen if you don't have your own private channel.
Thank you for your questions. It was not a big, my main research project. It was like, I take a short period to analyze, and I take the period of 3 months, because in this period we have a lot of Orthodox issues, because of Epiphany, because of Christmas, because of National Unity Day, and sure, it should be a period no less than 1 year to understand better. Yeah, to understand better how Orthodoxy is covered on different mass media show, it should be a bigger period, and I think it is a task for future. And I'm not sure that I understand the second question.
But the Pope has there's a Radio Vatican radio dedicated. You can hear all over the world, and there's a website. He's a web
designer.
Is it the same for the Orthodox
religion?
Do they invest a lot on
Yeah, I see. Thank you. It is. Yeah, they invest. They try to do more about this issue. But now I think it is the Orthodox channel and Orthodox radio is quite unpopular, even among Orthodox believers. So sorry for this, but they are quite. I don't want to say. It is quite uninteresting. sorry, because it is maybe it is very unmodern, because. Because of it, because of this. Maybe I need more time to answer your question and answer after the presentation.
Okay, so I'm Nathalie Lang, and I'm going to talk about Hindu religion on television in the French Overseas Department, La Réunion, by taking the example of two Hindu religious programs that are screened on the local TV channel Télécréole. To begin, I would like to share a situation with you that I witnessed during my anthropological fieldwork in La Réunion to show you, to give you an impression about the importance of these Hindu programs. So, it is on a Sunday afternoon when Josephine and her family are sitting around a large table in the living room of their house, decorated in a refined blend of Provençal and Indian style. A cousin with her husband and child have stopped by, and I assist a lively family get-together with discussions about family issues and upcoming religious festivities. In the course of the talking, Josephine brings up the TV show Pardel, which showed this morning how some Reunionist Hindus carried out a ceremony for their ancestors at the seafront. Josephine explains almost guiltily to her sister and daughters that she has learned through this morning's program that they had carried out the ritual for her deceased husband some days ago in the wrong way. It follows the discussion about how to perform this ritual, and Josephine in the end takes a decision to ask a priest for more explanations. So with this short scene, I want to point out to you that showing religious practices and providing explanations on Hindu rituals is one important function of this TV program, and watching the program can lead to discussions about religious contents in the audience. In my talk, I'm interested in how Reunionese of Indian origin use media facilities available in the French Overseas Department, and how religion, identity, and status are negotiated on Télé-Créole. And as the analysis will show, rather than merely considering how media are appropriated by Reunionese Hindus, media need to be conceived as actors in their own right, as Télé-Créole actively takes part in the negotiation of religion and identity. So first, I will give you a short historical overview of Hindu religion and television in La Réunion. Then I'm going to present the two Hindu religious programs broadcast on Télé-Créole with regards to negotiations of religion, status and identity, as well as with regards to the creation of a diasporic consciousness and simultaneously the valorization of local religious practice. Then follow some thoughts on the relation between television and laïcité before suggesting some concluding remarks. So, La Réunion is a diverse place in terms of ethnic origins and cultural forms, which results from multiple strands of migration. During colonialism, not only people from France immigrated, but also numerous slaves were brought, primarily from Madagascar and Africa, to work on sugarcane plantations in the 18th and 19th centuries. A small number of slaves also came from Malaysia, China, and India, but it was after the abolition of slavery that immigrants, mostly from South India, came to La Réunion as indentured laborers, obliged through a contract to work for 5 years. North Indian and Chinese traders form further waves of migration, and migrants from the Comoros count to the most recent ones. So this is a very simplified depiction of the most important waves of migration, just to show you that Reunionese society is made up out of a great diversity of origins, and the topic of my PhD project is Hindu religion in this diverse context. The development of Hindu religion in La Réunion needs to be understood by considering the historical encounter between French Catholics and South Indian Hindus. During colonialism, the attitude of Catholic missionaries and the colonial administration towards Indians was characterized by suspicion and repression, and when Indians decided to stay, they had to undergo formal assimilation, which included that all children received the French nationality and were baptized. While some historians focus on these continuous repressions of religious practices other than Catholic by the church, other scholars draw a rather positive picture of a plural Reunionese laïcité that renders possible the famous and often stated Reunionese art of living together, le fameux vivre ensemble. What is important in the historical developments is that the formal conversion to Catholicism did not lead to a rupture with religious practices from India. While publicly performing Catholic practices, Indians continued to conduct Hindu rituals in their private households and increasingly also in public. Today, there are no official numbers, but estimations speak of about 30% of Hindus, although many Reunionese actually have a double or multiple religiosity, for example, Hindu and Catholic. And this, of course, is a product of the colonial encounter, wherein also different elements of different religious practices got mixed, leading to new religious forms. What is also important for you to know is that the 19th century migration from India to La Réunion was followed by a period of sparse contact with India, and it is only in the 1970s that interest in Hindu religion and facilitated contact with India led to a reorientation towards India and Hinduism. While some Reunionese do not seek contact with India, but rather want to preserve the locally created traditions, others display a wish to purify the Reunionese Hindu religion through changes like, for example, substituting animal sacrifices with vegetarian rituals. the orientation, the reorientation towards India goes hand in hand with the process of Hindu religion becoming more and more visible in public. And this new visibility also shows in the creation of the two TV programs, which I'm going to talk about. The Tamil Federation, founded in 71, took an important part in this reorientation towards India, as it was interested in the import of priests, teachers, architects, painters from South India. And Hindu religion became more visible in public via ritual practices, but also due to negotiations with French administration with regards to different demands of the Tamil Federation, including, for example, the replacement of beef in schools and the army, or the right to give Tamil names, and, of course, access to radio and television. So this development of Hindu religion becoming more and more visible in public can be seen as parallel to the history of media in La Réunion, which are both closely tied to the fast transformations within the Réunionese society, which are perceived as the emergence of a Réunionese public sphere. Significant changes in the Réunionese landscape, media landscape, took place in the late 70s and 80s, with an increase from 2 to 3 daily journals, with the diversification from one public radio channel to 45 radio stations, and with the expansion of 2 public TV channels by a private one. This opening continued and led to the emergence of further local TV channels, and finally, in the 1990s, to an explosion of satellite programs. This opening included both globalizing and localizing tendencies. Television allowed for a global opening, including India and the Indian Ocean, and simultaneously it played part in paying attention and appreciating local Réunionese culture. So, for example, Creole language was finally allocated space on radio and local TV channels. The focus on the local becomes especially apparent in the private channel Télé-Créole, which is fully locally produced, unlike Antenne Réunion, for example, which, to my knowledge, collaborates with the metropolitan private channel TF1. Télé-Créole received authorization in 2004, and since 2010, thanks to the arrival of the digital terrestrial television, La TNT, Télé-Créole is part of 10 freely accessible channels next to Réunion Première, Antenne Réunion, the bunch of France Télévisions, donc France 2, 3, 4, 5, 0, Arte, and France 24. The director of Télé-Créole pursues the motto Culture et Création Locale, and the Tamil Federation arranged with Télé-Créole to broadcast its TV program. So, as we can see, the historical development from a state monopoly to 10 channels, including one fully local one, and the creation of a weekly Hindu program for Télé-Créole present an important step in the process of rendering Hindu religion more public and offering a space for explanations and discussions about Hindu religion and Indian culture. To sum up, the fast transformations within the Réunionese society, including the global and localizing of print and audiovisual media, go hand in hand with the re-establishment of relations with India, as well as with an increased visibility of Hindu religion. So let's have a closer look at the two Hindu programs. Télé-Créole broadcasts 2 weekly Hindu religious programs, Padel and Culture Indienne. Padel is produced by the Tamil Federation, and the word Padel in Creole designs the plates of offerings for Hindu deities, which you can see here. And I would like to show you some short sequences, just to give you an impression about how what this program is like. And let's hope it will work. So first there will be a short welcome. And then the thought of the day, La Pensée du Jour, is projected and read out, which is often an extract of the work of a philosophical or spiritual thinker. And then I will always forward a bit, or in this case, I have some small clips.
C'est donc au Vilma à Paris de Saint-Denis, devant la représentation de Nataraja, le roi de la danse, comme vous pouvez le voir derrière moi, que j'ai le plaisir de vous accueillir. Nataraja est notre sujet du jour. Nous évoquons aujourd'hui une des formes de Shiva, car nous célébrerons bientôt, c'est-à-dire le lundi 7 mars, la grande nuit de ce dernier, la Mahashivaratri. Qui est Nataraja? Nous le verrons en détail tout à l'heure, mais avant cela, place à la pensée du jour.
Toutes les religions du monde déclarent que l'unité est en nous. Une fois réalisée, l'unité avec le divin, il n'y a pas d'autre progrès à accomplir. Connaître, c'est trouver cette unité. Swami Vivekananda.
Après vous êtes imprégné de cette pensée spirituelle, place à la rubrique « Pourquoi le faisons-nous ?»
Bonjour, namaste, manakam, bonjour à toutes. La semaine dernière, nous l'avons étudié dans notre réflexion sur la conception du temple chez les hindous. Nous l'avons vu, pourquoi il représente le Garbhagriha, le sanctuaire, l'endroit où il est installé.
So the speaker here is a spiritual teacher of one of La Réunion's ashrams, and he provides explanations about the meanings in religious ceremonies. And as we can see, he speaks in Creole. So the next part is a video clip with Indian music. Sometimes it's from India, and then this time it's from La Réunion by an Indian singer who sings with a Réunionese association.
La semaine prochaine. En attendant, écoutons ce Vajanam.
And then come again explanations, this time about the upcoming festival Mahashivaratri by a Réunionese priest.
Shiva lui-même, comme nous l'appelons Shiva dansant, Shiva Nataraja, le grand dieu de la danse, le maître de la danse, nous dissocierons deux types de tanda.
And the final part of the program shows some recently filmed Hindu events in La Réunion, and in this case it is Timidi, which means firewalking. So here you can see the preparations for the firewalking, all the ceremonies, then the procession, and then in the end, people walking on fire, on the burning coals. And the program ends with the announcement of future events and the farewell of the presenters.
Votre émission Padel touche à sa fin. Merci à vous de l'avoir suivie. Nous remercions le président du COVID et son comité de nous avoir accueillis. La semaine prochaine, vous retrouverez votre rubrique Un jour à Chapelle. En attendant, moi je vous retrouve très bientôt pour un nouveau sujet religieux. Passez une excellente journée et une excellente semaine. Namaste. Vanakkam.
Okay, so the full program lasts about 30 to 40 minutes, and after being broadcast on Télé-Créole Sunday morning at 9 and repeated on Wednesday afternoon, the shows are uploaded online where everyone can watch them. With regards to one of the questions of our colloquium about how religious facts are covered in the media, I would say that although the focus in this program lies on providing explanations and could therefore be seen as conforming to the concept of religious fact in that religion is treated as historical and social fact, but the devotional music that we have seen and the prayers included in the programs furnish it with a devotional character as well. So now let's compare the two programs. While the explications provided in Padel consider both Indian and local Reunionese knowledge, which points out towards the valorization of both ways, the weekly program Culture Indienne seems to rather focus on local Reunionese practice. It shows Hindu events that have taken place in La Réunion, such as these famous fire walkings, in a more or less sparsely edited documentary style without providing much explanation. And it therefore seems to be designed for a community of insiders who have attended these rituals or who want to see their co-practitioners involved in these rituals. For both programs, Padel and Culture Indienne, I would suggest that to be shown in one such program can imply a certain social status. But here again, status is displayed in different ways. Being solicited to give explanations as an expert on Padel provides the possibility to distinguish oneself through one's knowledge, especially knowledge about Indian rituals, philosophical backgrounds, and spiritual tenets seem to earn high esteem and to be crucial for the creation of a diasporic consciousness, which needs to be seen in the context of a widely shared perception of lost traditions and lost knowledge due to the sparse contact with India for a long time. Display of status might also be seen in the selection of filmed Hindu events, which we have seen in the last section of Padel, and this becomes even more obvious in Culture Indienne. Devotees are proud to be filmed for this program, which requires payment, at least I was told so in some temples, and probably also relations to filmmakers working for Télé-Créole. In contrast to Padel, the focus in Culture Indienne does not lie so much on the display of knowledge and explanations, but rather in the performance of rituals, which embody Reunionese, Hindu, and Creole identity, like the impressive firewalkings. Being shown on Télé-Créole can, however, not only earn esteem, but also bring disgrace, for instance, when running instead of walking over the burning coals. So both TV programs provide an important space for Reunionese Hindu practitioners who can distinguish themselves within the heterogeneous Hindu community, which is sometimes divided between the valorization of Indian or Reunionese values or between social class or ethnic differences or along other lines. And in addition, the display of Hindu religion on TV contributes to an increased visibility in the entire Reunionese society. So what do these programs tell us about the relation between television and diaspora? Research on South Asian diaspora and television has shown how diasporic belonging can be created through the access to homeland television, news, and films. Indian films can offer spaces for the negotiation and imagination of South Asian identities and serve as a means to acquire language and religious knowledge. Research has shown that ancestral languages can play a crucial role in the construction of imagined communities. But for the case of La Réunion, as most Réunionese of Indian origin do not have the necessary knowledge in Tamil or other Indian languages, they most often do not benefit from receiving Indian TV channels unless subtitles are available. So in the locally produced program Padel, except for the introduction and ending, which contain greeting and thanking formulas in Tamil, the program is presented in French language, with interviewees speaking French or Creole. So Padel meets both the wish to provide explanations about Hindu religion and India and the need to provide explanations in French language. In this way, I would argue, Padel can contribute to an Indian diasporic consciousness in its own Reunionese way. This diasporic consciousness seems to be very much created by the appropriation of knowledge about Hindu religion and India, which is used for an origin-conscious self-positioning in the Reunionese society. Here it is important to note that not all Reunionese Hindus relate their religious practices and identities to India, but that for many, their ritual practices embody a Reunionese Creole identity. And this is also reflected in the valorization of both Indian and Reunionese traditions in the TV programs. Furthermore, it is important to remark that the kind of diasporic consciousness which is created among some but not all Reunionese Hindus does not often, most often not imply a wish to live in India, but rather to relate to India in their self-positioning within the Reunionese society by the performance of religious and cultural knowledge in daily actions. Reunionese Hindus therefore negotiate their diasporic relation to India very much with regards to their life in La Réunion. For the same reasons, the TV program cannot serve as a media that reaches a global South Asian diaspora. Being designed in French language with a focus on the interests of Reunionese Hindus, it presents a very it presents a way of addressing the locally specific needs of this religious community in the French Overseas Department. So what does this mean for Hindu religion to be present in a French overseas department? And what do these Hindi TV programs tell us about the relation between television and laïcité? As part of the freedom of opinion, the constitutions of European Union countries ensure freedom of information and guarantee a certain time allocation on religious programs on radio and TV. Religious programs are imposed by law on the channel France 2, for example, and to my knowledge, broadcasting time is allocated to religious groups which are important in terms of numbers and also socially not controversial, to which Hindu religion does not seem to count. So with regards to the presence of two Hindu programs in La Réunion, while I'm not aware of any such program in a metropolitan French channel, one apparently needs to consider the context of an important Hindu community of about 30% of the population. The circumstances of already existing Catholic, Protestant and Muslim programs on France 2 that are broadcast via Réunion Première might explain why there are no other locally specific programs for these religions. And the program Évangile pour tous of the Réunionese Pentecostal Church Mission Salut et Guérison is the only other locally produced religious program that on Télé-Créole that I am aware of. I would argue that the presence of two Hindu religious programs on a Réunionese TV channel points towards a certain importance of Hindu religion in the French Overseas Department and to a locally specific way of dealing with locally specific demands. It seems that there's a general acceptance of Hindu religion and these Hindu programs by the Reunionese population. And as I remarked, interest in these programs, both amongst Hindus and other Reunionese, and a certain valorization of La Réunion's diverse cultural aspects. I would suggest that the visibility of Hindu religion on TV programs reflects an openness towards diverse religious practices, which seems to be one of the major characteristics of how the concept of laïcité is perceived in La Réunion. When speaking of the principle of laïcité, one needs, of course, to be careful not to assume it as a static notion without considering enough its creation and negotiation in discursive practices. So taking this into consideration, I can only state that for many of my informants, respect and openness towards religious diversity seems to be at the heart of their understanding of laïcité, which also finds its expression in the presentation of religion on television. So to conclude, the analysis of the two Reunionese Hindu programs reveals that Télé-Créole can serve as a diasporic media that allows for acquiring religious and cultural knowledge and for a display of Indian origins and links to India nowadays. At the same time, Télé-Créole offers a media space for the presentation and creation of Reunionese Creole identity. And apart from these cultural references, both programs provide spaces for the display and negotiation of social status of Reunionese priests and devotees. Considering these abilities, Télé-Créole needs to be conceived as an actor in its own right rather than a passive means to an end, because by taking the decision to provide screening time for the Tamil Federation and by deciding which religious events are to be screened on the program Culture Indienne, Télé-Créole actively takes part in the negotiation of religion and identity in La Réunion. And finally, the visibility of Hindu religion on a Réunionese TV channel points towards an understanding of laïcité as openness towards religious diversity. Thank you.
It's a pity we don't have too much time to discuss, but I really enjoyed your paper, and I think it would be interesting also perhaps looking into some other national contexts where public service providers have had recent policy changes in the way that they should accommodate religious diversity, ethnic diversity, and so on. I know, for example, the Netherlands, the Scandinavian countries. Sometimes it becomes a bit of an interesting debate within journalism in these countries about whether a kind of public journalism where you should create space for diversity is the goal, or whether a more objective, factual, more laicity or secularist informed journalism is the way to go. And that might be an interesting way of going further.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you for this remark. This would be really interesting. Yeah, into the policy aspect. So far, I've only looked at the people involved, the people watching these programs, and the people shown in these programs. Yeah.
In terms of regulation of religion at the public space, I think laïcité has never been a question for the territories of outside France, no? France itself, not the territories in Commandie Outre-mer, French Overseas Department. So I don't know if we have to make a distinction between the private channels or any other private effort to perform or to present religion, and the public channels, which they do might have something to say about laïcité. So I mean, because laïcité is something that has to do with the state. Outside the state, I think it's not a question of laïcité. It could be a question of secularization, not strictly of laïcité, I would think. I don't know if you agree.
Thank you. The fact that these programs are screened on a private channel does not mean that that there's no relation with the state. So Télé-Créole has partnerships, for example, with La Région, with the Conseil Général, and with municipalities of the capital, Saint-Denis, and two other cities. And also the CSA, the Conseil Supérieur de l'Audiovisuel, has to give authorization for these channels. So he gave authorizations for Télé-Créole, and Télé-Créole needed to provide information about its programs. Interestingly, in the official statement of the CSA on the authorization of Télé-Créole until the year 2020, I did not find religion amongst the contexts shown on this TV channel.